This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
The Ellen Greenberg documentary, if you have watched it on Hulu, good. Now it's time to be enraged. Now is time to express some concern. Let your voice be heard, because this is a case that hasn't had enough voices behind it, for whatever reason it may be. Maybe it's because it uses icky words, words that we can't say right now because it might upset the gods at YouTube. So we'll use the word unalive instead of, you know, the other word that starts with an S. Just so you're aware of that, maybe it's because it talks about someone's life being gone. Maybe it's because there are certain people involved in this case that don't want information getting out about it. That's crossed the mind of many as well, who've also been trying to report on this case for the last many of years. But the chicken's out of the hen house. And now, well, it's time to let your voice be heard. So please, if you watch that doc, and if you're just starting to watch this right now, you're going to learn a lot about the Ellen Greenberg case. And this family, her parents, and justice for Ellen, very important, because it needs public pressure, because the laws haven't worked, because the lawsuits haven't worked, because common sense that says if you stab yourself 20 times, including post-mortem stabs, well, that's not unaliving yourself. That's someone else unaliving you. And that's called murder. But that's not exactly how this is being treated. It's not being treated as a homicide. It's still listed as a unaliving. I'm waiting for this to completely change in the lexicon, and we don't even use that word anymore, where it's just like, oh, that's how we say it now, because I have a feeling we're going to get there, and it's going to be a bad word at some point, just in general. Here's the question. How does a young woman end up stabbed 20 times, including in the back of her neck, and it gets called a suicide? The central question in the case of Ellen Greenberg, a case that's been quietly festering over a decade until now, because this week Hulu dropped the documentary that puts it all out there. The raw 911 call, the bruises no one explained, the crime scene that was clean before it was even processed, and a family that spent 14 years fighting to get anyone in power to say what the evidence already screams, that it wasn't an unaliving. We're talking about death in apartment 603. That's the doc on Hulu. That's not just retelling the story, it's exposing how institutions bury uncomfortable truths. You're going to hear the first responder say it straight. You don't need an ambulance. You need a homicide detective. And we're going to be digging in today. We've got the timeline. We've got clips from the doc. We're going to walk you through some of the most dramatic pieces in this documentary. We've got the receipts. We're going to walk through this and walk through what this documentary revealed, and more importantly, what the public wasn't told back when it mattered most. And if you followed the case, this is going to piss you off, hopefully. If you haven't, buckle up, because once you see it, you really can't unsee it. To begin the whole thing, though, we're gonna start with a 911 call. This is the 911 call that started it all. This is a 911 call, and let me set it up for you here so you understand what we're about to walk into. This 911 call was made by Sam Goldberg. This is Ellen Greenberg's fiance. He made this 911 call after, as he claims, breaking the door down because it was locked from the inside, got into the apartment, and discovered what he discovered. And you'll hear him describe what he discovered in just a moment. Before he broke the door down, though, for about an hour, it's described that he allegedly went up and down the elevator, went to the security guard, said, "You need to get me into that unit," in more or less terms. And he said, I can't leave my post. I can't. That's part of the thing. Unless law enforcement's here, I can't leave the post. He made a big scene. Big scene. Anyone basically who would listen, it seems, was aware he was not able to get into the apartment. But when it came time to actually break into the apartment, the only one who saw it was him. No one was there watching him break down the door, contrary to the actual police reports, which he allegedly told police officers. It ended up on the report that, well, the security was there and watched him break it down. That part never happened. And that's very important in this, because that little factoid, the little factoid that the apartment was locked and he had to break in to get to Ellen, that little fact is what turned this thing into a big deal. Because that's what allowed police to say initially, oh, well, this is a suicide because no one else came in. There's a nor'easter going on. There's a big storm outside. Nobody else has come and gone. And she has mental health issues. Sam also told the officers that, which also led them to believe and mark that little box suicide, hampering any sort of homicide investigation, hampering any sort of investigators coming out, taking a look at the crime scene, hampering anyone from calling it a crime scene, and allowing a cleanup crew to come in the very next day and clean it up. A little crime scene cleanup crew to clean it up. No investigation, no evidence, all gone. Because, well, you convinced him it was a suicide. The door was locked after all. It's comically horrible. And it, at the end of the day, seems like a series of really bad good luck for some people. We're going to talk about all of it today. We're going to start with that 911 phone call, and then we'll begin our discussion. This is where it begins. Let's take a listen. This is Sam Goldberg calling 911.
Oh, I just walked into my apartment. My fiance's on the floor with blood everywhere.
What is the address?
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please come help.
4601
Flat Rock Road.
Is it the house or apartment?
Oh, no. It's an apartment.
What apartment number?
Please hurry, please.
Where is she bleeding from?
I don't know. I can't tell. She's.
No. So you have to calm yourself down in order to get you some help.
I'm sorry. She, okay. I don't know. I'm looking at her right now. I can't see anything. She didn't, there's nothing broken. She's bleeding. Ellie!
You don't know where she's bleeding from? Can't
Ellie!
Where blood's coming from?
It's, I think her head. I think she hit her head, I think.
But
it's
up
everywhere.
Okay,
it's everywhere.
I think she might have fallen. Do you know what happened?
She may have slipped. There's blood on the table. Her face is a little purple.
Okay, hold on for rescue for her. Stay on the phone.
Philadelphia Fire Department 842. What's the address? No,
4601 Flat Rock Road. Please hurry.
4601 Flat Rock?
Yes.
What's wrong?
I went downstairs to go work out. I came back up. The door was latched. My fiance's inside. She wasn't answering. So after about a half hour, I decided to break it down. I see her now just on the floor with blood. She's not responding.
Okay, is she breathing? Look at her chest. I need you to calm down. I need you to look at her chest. It's really.
I don't think she. I really don't think she is.
Listen to me. Someone's on the way. Look at her chest. Is she flat on her back?
She's on her back.
Look at her chest and tell me if it's going up and down, up and down.
I don't see her moving.
Okay, do you know how to do CPR?
I don't.
Okay, I can tell you what to do, okay, until they get there. I want you to keep her
focused. Oh, God.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, okay.
Are you willing to do CPR with me over the phone until they get there?
I have to, right?
Okay, so get her flat on her back, bare her chest, okay? You want to rip her shirt off. Okay. Kneel down by her side.
Oh, my God. Allie, please.
Listen, you can't freak out, sir, because you
okay, I'm trying not to. Her shirt won't come off. It's a zipper. Oh, my God. She stabbed herself.
Where?
She fell with a knife. Oh, no. Her knife's sticking out.
Her what?
There's a knife sticking out of her heart.
Oh, she stabbed herself?
I guess so. I don't know where she fell on it. I don't know.
Okay, well, don't touch it.
Okay, so I just let her down. Here now? I mean, what do I do?
No, I mean, you can't. If the knife is in her chest, it's going to be kind of hard for you to do CPR at this time.
Oh, no. Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Police with shop reader.
277.
Is all someone right, coming here?
Yes, they are. You said 4601 Flat Rock, right?
Yes.
Okay, someone's on the way. And the knife is still inside?
Wait, so what?
The knife is still inside of her?
Yes, I didn't take it out.
Was it her chest or what area?
It's in her chest. It looks like it's right in her heart.
Okay, someone's on the way out there. Okay, just get.
Oh my God!
Okay. How old is she?
27.
27, and there's no sign of life at all.
No, please don't be. What?
Been trying to her arm and tell me she responds to pain.
She's not. Her arm and her hands are still warm. I don't know if that means, but there's blood everywhere. I mean.
I know, but you can't. And the knife is still inside of her. How far? Can you see how far it went in?
It looks pretty deep.
Okay.
It looks 3 inches. It's a long knife.
Don't touch anything.
Yeah, don't touch anything. Okay.
I'm not touching anything. I can't believe this, though.
No, wait. It was just you there with her?
We're the only ones here.
And she ran in the door. You said latched it shut.
No. I went downstairs to work out, and when I came back up, the door was latched.
Oh.
Like it was, you know, it wasn't like it was, you know, it was like locked from the inside. And I'm yelling, and I saw it
was
some, you know,
was
yelling.
Was your house broken into?
No.
So there's no sign of a break-in.
No sign of a break-in at all. I mean, there will be when you get here because I had to break the latch, but. To get in.
Okay, 4601 Flat Rock, and this is a house, right?
It's an apartment. Flat Rock apartment.
Okay, that'll help.
Oh my God. All right, thank
okay.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Bye.
Think anybody's renting out that apartment?
Yeah, I wondered what they're doing with that apartment. I mean, now that they named it in the Hulu documentary,
yeah.
You can't really rent that one out.
I think what I saw in the documentary last night, because they're going in to yeah. still like set, I think they said yeah. it's not being rented out.
It's not as of right now. I mean, when they did it, I don't know if we're just because it was not, you know, being rented at the moment, you know, and it just happened to be dumb luck that, you know, we're doing a documentary. Can we get into a similar type unit to try, you know, to lay this out? They're like, well, actually, guess what? It's available. I don't know. I would think you almost need to change the number on that apartment if you're going to re-rent it. And you don't have to. It's a rental, so you don't have to disclose that either.
Right.
And if you're a property manager, I don't know. I think if you're in that building, everyone kind of knows that's the unit. May just end up having to be storage.
It's like only murders in the building, you know? Everybody
yeah.
knows it's that one.
Exactly. That's the 911 call. There's so much in that, and we can talk about that in just a moment. We're going to start taking a look at some of the clips. We're going to set up and hear from some of the eyewitnesses from that day that saw all of this happen, or how it led up to that moment. That's in just a few moments. But okay, reactions to the 911 call, and you guys give yours in the comment section wherever you're watching this. Stacey?
So, you know, my position on this hasn't changed. I've thought this was absurd from the moment I heard it. I'm going to preface it by saying he has not been charged, innocent until proven guilty, all of those disclaimers.
Yep.
Now that I've said those.
He maintains his innocence, never been charged, and not even been a suspect. Never even, yeah. Anyway, so yes.
Correct. As a former first responder, and everybody's reaction is different, and I've voiced this before, so forgive me if you've heard this story before, and I'll keep it brief. But when I was an EMT firefighter for about a year and a half, 2 years, and when we would go on scene and something horrific had happened, family members are frantic. I never heard the 911 calls. You know, we would just get dispatched to the scene, and we'd know what we were coming into from the dispatch and from, the 911 operator. So what we would typically see are frantic family members. They can't communicate with you. I mean, some are a little better than others, but for the most part, they're pretty traumatized, especially something like this. I mainly have experience with cardiac events, strokes, things like that. I never did see a bloody scene. I never saw anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And even from a cardiac event, people are frantic. So I can't imagine somebody having this clarity saying, oh, she fell on the knife. Whoa, wait a minute. What? How do you know that? How do you know this detail? Most people would say there's a knife in her chest. They would give you a fact as they see it, not the explanation as to how it got there, unless they watched it happen. If they witnessed an event, you'd want to talk to these people about what did you see?
Mm-hmm.
And they would give you that detail. Well, they were walking into the kitchen and then they passed out and hit the floor, hit the cupboard with their head. You know, they would give you a play-by-play. because that's what actually happened. Mm-hmm. I'm a little suspect about where this detail came from that he knew.
And did he know, or was it just how he expresses himself?
I don't know.
Is he just kind of a doofus in the way he talks about things? And I don't know. I mean, that's the hard thing about Sam Goldberg is we have no baseline. We don't know how he normally speaks. We don't know. And I don't know if having that certainly would be helpful. It would be, he's kind of goofy in the way he talks about them. Some people are like that, you know?
True.
So there, I mean, and again, we're not saying he did this. We just have a lot of questions, as this documentary brought up a lot of questions that I think need some answers, not just it was suicide, shut up and go away.
Mm-hmm.
Look, if you're on the 911 call and the operator says, okay, you're going to do CPR, and your response is, I guess I have to, right?
It's a little weird.
It's beyond weird. That's the weirdest thing I've ever heard. Especially if you don't know at that moment in time that you can't. It seems like a response of, mm-hmm. They're going to tell me I have to do suicide. I already know I can't do suicide because there's a knife in my fiance. So that ain't going to work. But I haven't communicated that yet. And according to them, I don't know about it yet. Oh, there's a knife in her chest. Oh, my God. She fell on a knife. A little sus. A little weird.
Yeah.
Explain it. One thing
I noticed this time listening to it that I didn't notice last time was there was a change in the operator at some point, right? Early on, there was one operator, and then they switched him over to like another one.
I believe so. They transferred the call. Mm-hmm.
So his demeanor came across more like you would expect with that first call. Like that first part of the call, he's like, oh, my God. And as soon as that second person came on the call, it was different. That's where he's like, oh, I went down to the gym and I just came up and the door was locked and blah, blah, blah. And he's going through all the steps. So the first part of the call, I'm going, okay, he actually sounds like he's kind of frantic here. Like he just walked in on a loved one who's bleeding and on the floor, but it switches really freaking fast.
Did it sound? I agree, but I also feel like it sounded like someone who's doing a high school play. You have to sound really scared and shocked at this moment in time. How would that sound?
Like when you call in sick to work, but you're not sick. So
yes. I'm not really, Tony. I'm not
sick now. Well, work sick work. I'm sick. I mean, it's just. It's like someone said, "Okay, you got to go act. Go now. Scene." What I will say to that, Todd, and I agree, is he's calm when he has to tell his narrative of what he
did. Exactly.
When it comes to Ellen and it comes to reacting, it's chaos. But when it comes to what happened here, well, it's a total change in it's like bipolar almost. It's like, but in a more fast way. It's like I'm that's not what happened at all. Here's what I mean. It's so jarringly different that if you are in that scene and you're legitimately shocked because you're seeing your fiance dead on the ground for the first time.
Correct. And Jennifer makes a really good point here. She said, did you notice the silence on the line on his end while the call was being transferred? I would be talking to Ellen, trying to wake her up. It was very quiet. And she's right. Jennifer nailed this. It was so quiet there.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you be like, my God, Ellie, my God, something, do something, you know, wake up. Hello. I mean, you wouldn't just be sitting there going, listening to the Walgreens, you know, on hold music.
You know? I'm also kind of shocked at the lie. Maybe Sam doesn't swear. Maybe Sam doesn't use explicitives. I don't know. But I'm kind of shocked at the lack of that, too.
Well, you'd be hearing some F-bombs from me.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like it's sanitized for YouTube. well, this call might get played back a lot, so I better make it so I don't say any bad words. I was kind of shocked at the level of sanitation that was done on this call in terms of language. But again, mm-hmm. We don't have a baseline on Sam, so we don't know how he normally speaks. He may be someone who just, that's just not part of his vernacular.
Gosh darn. There's a lot of that. Yeah.
So there's a lot of possibilities, but damn, this thing looks bad. This thing looks so suspect and weird and bad. And what makes it worse is there wasn't the investigation. There wasn't the questioning. There's no state. He did make a statement to CNN. I'll find it here in a little bit, a couple years ago. But essentially, it's just mental health problems are real. Please, be aware. I mean, because that's the narrative. The narrative the whole time was the door was locked and she has mental health problems. That's what allowed the police to say, this is a suicide. Okay, everybody can go home now. Oh, you want to hire cleaners the next day or two and come clean up the scene professionally? Go for it. We don't need the scene. It's not a crime scene at all. That's what allowed all of those wheels to go into motion in this. It was a several days later where they said homicide. And oh, wait, well, now that it's homicide, you can't go back and do anything with the scene. It's gone. The body's literally being buried the day they decide it's a homicide. And then a few days after that, no, we were wrong. Our bad. It's a suicide. Why the change? What was the change all about? We're going to get into all of that here in just a few moments. We're going to watch the next clip in a second. Again, I got to say, Sam Goldberg, Ellen Greenberg's fiance at the time of her death, has never been charged with any crime in connection to this case, okay? He has consistently maintained that Ellen's death was a suicide. All individuals mentioned in this segment are presumed innocent unless proven otherwise. This is us riffing. This is having a conversation. You can make your own choices and your own decisions on what the hell's going on here. And we're not saying he did it. We're just saying there's a lot of questions that need answering. Okay, let's go watch our first clip from the doc. This is the documentary that's on Hulu right now. Please do check it out. This is kind of setting up what led into that 911 call.
This, in combination with going up and down the elevators to the lobby, goes on for about an hour before he finally makes entry into the apartment and makes the 911 call. Ellen was found up against the cabinetry in the corner, slunched down, blood all over her body, on the cabinetry where clearly her head had slid down the cabinet, and there is a knife sticking out of her chest. At around 6:40 p.m., the police, fire and rescue were there, and detectives are there because this looks like, at least from the call, to be a homicide. So homicide detectives come out as well as police.
The next time I go to the door, I could hear Sam talking to the police officer about her medication and that she had some mental health issues.
After Sam spoke with the detectives, they believed that Ellen was experiencing mental health issues. So instead of investigating this, they call it a suicide on scene.
I was told that she had stabbed herself. The gurney came out and it was empty, and Sam was told that she had passed, and that she was dead. And he started crying and just asked what I could do.
There's a lot of people in this that do attest to Sam being very upset, very animated at this moment in time. I want to say that he wasn't sitting there in the corner like, want to go get some Arby's? You know, he was very in, it seems, in the moment, at least according to those who were around him at that moment in time. And also at the funeral, apparently very animated, which, if you're grieving the death of your fiance that you were planning on spending the rest of your life with, everybody expresses it differently. Some are more vocal than others. We'll leave that at that. But that's what led up to those moments. Two big things that were revealed right there. He convinced the first responders this was a suicide, and they didn't ask questions.
How can even if you walk in and it looks 100% like this person took their own life? First responders aren't allowed to make that assumption,
no,
are they?
No.
No.
Stacey, you lived that life. Did you ever walk in and somebody say, well, what do you think, Stacey? What happened here?
No, you treat the symptoms. You let the medical examiner, or when you transport, you let them decide what the diagnosis is. We don't diagnose. We cannot. It's out of our scope of practice. You treat what you see, and what you see is somebody who's not breathing. You do CPR. You administer oxygen. You put in an IV. You do all the things. It's not for you to decide any of this.
Well, the officers did. And that's where it ended, right there. So I want to say that because watching this documentary, I think really put this case, and I've been on this for a couple years now.
Well, you were in the documentary. I mean, I saw last night. I saw your face in it.
Please tell me we're going to play that.
I don't think it's in any of the clips. Yeah, I'm in the doc too. I didn't even realize. I was making pasta sauce the other night, and all of a sudden I hear my voice. I'm like, did it switch over to one of our shows? I'm like, oh, I'm in the doc.
Dude, self-promote. Did you not learn anything in the years of radio? You self-promote.
I guess that I, what do you mean? I mean, I'm in the doc. I don't know. I mean, we're talking about it right now. So I think we are self-promoted.
All right. Whatever.
So I've been talking about this case for damn near 3 years, and I've been shocked at the lack of traction this case gets, just because it has so many ingredients of just outrageousness, of insane behavior, of asking people to suspend belief of reality. But what I was saying is, I feel like this doc really lined out it in a, and it's interesting with storytelling how it can do it, with one person telling the story this way, one telling it that way, same information, you can see it in different perspectives. And what I'm seeing here are two different paths, because we seem to want to connect this into a conspiracy that maybe the police or Philadelphia, somewhere higher up, there's a connection there that got this this thing suppressed. And I'm not saying that that's not a possibility, but at least initially, I don't think it was. I'm thinking maybe further down the line, there may have been, you know, some hey, you know, I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine. But initially, I don't. Here's my two cents on it. And if this happened this way, here's how it's making sense to me. It's a big if. I'm going to guess there was some sort of accident. I'm going to guess accident or moment of heated arguing that somebody did something stupid. And I don't know. I don't think Sam... if he has anything to do with this, set out and said, I'm going to go kill my fiance today. I don't think that happened. Could there have been some sort of struggle? Could she have started to try and hurt herself? Did he get involved? Did something happened? What exactly that is, I don't know. I don't know that it was a vicious, I'm going to go in here and stab you. But that is that's ended up being what happened. So either it was some accident happened, something was about to blow, and it did. And she ended up dead. Now, what that is, I don't know, because there were strangulation marks on her body.
I have a different theory, but I'll let you finish.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, did someone strangle her first? Oh, shit. Well, you can't strangle yourself to death. That's not suicide. We don't have a gun. She stabbed herself. And then you set it up to look like this stabbing scene. I don't know. It's bizarre. Something occurred, and he had to do damage control. Again, this is my theory. I have no idea if it's fact. He's innocent until proven guilty. I'm running down this scene. Damage control is what is needed. What am I going to do? Goes to the gym. Comes back. Can't get in the apartment. Again, no one is witness to this door ever being locked out other than him. So we have to take his word that that's what it is. Causes a scene. Goes up and down the elevator. Lets everybody know. Oh my God, like, I can't get in. There's something going on. You're going to get sympathy and empathy. Like, what? Oh, there's a problem going on here. He can't get in. And it's locked from the inside. So he's clearly not the one in there. That's set up. Gets up there. I don't know that he ever broke the door damn open. I could see, I got to make it look like I broke the door open. So you get inside, you latch the door, and you start jerking it till you get some traction on those screws on that lock, and it busts it open a little bit. So it looks like there had been somebody that tried to break the door open from the outside. You could create that damage from the inside or the outside. That would not be difficult to do. That's not a hard task to take up. And then, first responders come.
Well,
we heard the 911 call.
Back up a little bit, because he calls his uncle first before he calls 911.
Oh, yes. We got to put that in there, too. Calls the uncle, calls all of these people that are going to help him in this process. So, yes, you're right. That's got to be in there, too, which is very weird and sus.
That does not fucking happen. No,
starts obsessively calling her to make it look of concern, and then gets in. So there's a digital record. There's these people that see him frantic and scared and gets in and then manages, out of sheer dumb luck, to convince the authorities to walk away and believe this is a suicide, to which they did. I think that was fucking luck. I'm going to guess if he did this, and again, never been charged, never. And so who the hell knows, whoever did this, but if he did do this, that was pure luck that set the rest of this in motion. Because this gets going, and it's ruled a suicide, and they start looking into it. Wait a second. This looks more like a homicide. And then they have to reckon with the fact that they did give clearance. Sam Goldberg's family did not go in and just start cleaning this and hoping they didn't get caught. They got permission. They checked the boxes. They went through the steps you're supposed to go through before these sort of things happen. Because at some point you do have to have it cleaned up, because police don't do that. That's on you. That's on you and your crime scene of your loved one, unfortunately. That's how that works. So my guess is, okay, well, they got permission. You're going to jump at that. The police said, we can clean it. Clean it. So immediately, crime scene cleanup, literally what it's called, shows up, cleans the place up. And then they also get permission. Can we go get some of Ellen's personal effects for her funeral? Because God knows Sam's uncle needs to go and get Ellen's digital devices for the funeral. Why? Wouldn't that be her family's to get, not Sam's uncle by marriage, who's the high-powered attorney, to go and get her digital devices out of the scene where it appears this woman came back from the dead and murdered herself? That just seems a little odd, too. So what the hell is the story there? Now, this is how... When you look at it that way, you go, okay, so now you have the police that are going to have a mountain of questions to answer of why did you handle this in such a horrible way? So they're going to start backtracking. They're going to start covering their tracks. If he's covering his tracks, he's had 1,000% the best luck in the world of trying to cover up whatever the hell that was, whether it's a murder, whether it's, you know, was homicide, whether it's first degree, second degree, whatever the hell that was. He's getting away with it if he did it. And then the paths keep going until they start going, oh, this might be a homicide. Then, oh gosh, this is where I think you may have some intermingling of you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours.
Right.
Because that's where you then get the ruling changed from unaliving back over to homicide. And it goes there for a moment, for a couple days, and then they have the meeting, and nobody can remember the meeting. Nobody knows who said what in the meeting. Nobody knows why they changed the ruling. And that's all in the documentary, too.
Yeah.
And it's all, and it goes back to unaliving herself. And then game over. You got away with it. Whoever did it got away with it. That's my personal context on it. Again, just my guess. Everyone's innocent until proven guilty. Sam's never been charged with a crime, and I'm not saying he did it. I'm saying in theory, if that's, this is how it appears it may look.
There's another story here, and I'm sorry, I've been chomping at the bit, because I just, as a woman, I feel this, especially in my world. I think she wanted out. I think she had changed her mind. She hated her job.
Wanted out of life or the relationship?
The relationship. I think she was questioning her life choices.
Yeah.
She was depressed. I'm not doubting at all that she was depressed. And those text messages, she fucking hated her job.
Which all could have led to this.
Correct. I think there was a confrontation because she said she wanted to quit her job. And I bet you money there was a discussion. Again, he's never been charged. This is just my gut talking. But I bet she came home and said, here's what I'm doing. I'm quitting this job. I can't take it anymore. He got pissed somehow. And then everything escalated. And she started talking about how this isn't what she wants for her life. She wants something different. Maybe she threw out something that she wants something different because he's traveling all the time. She struggled with that.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't what she wanted for her future.
Yeah.
And he saw this as, well, there goes my reputation. My beautiful fiance is going to call things off and I'm going to look like a shit. And mm-hmm. things start to escalate. The strangulation marks, that we've talked about strangulation. This is, I feel there's something festering under the scene here that got deleted on these devices that we never saw and we will never see.
We did see some texts, however, where she would say, I really don't want this job anymore, man. I would really like to go. And he's like, well, you know, you're not a quitter, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you're not a quitter.
So which could be just someone trying to pep somebody up, you know, who's going through some stuff.
Maybe, but then also don't forget that there was actual notations of bruising that was in the healing process.
Yes.
At the autopsy. Yes. And yes, she was on some medications that could have had something to do with that, but
aren't we all?
Well, exactly. And here's, so I have to say, Stacey, I think you and I are on a very similar page, because even in those texts, the way he responded, if he were truly a partner who supported her, we'll get through this. Yep. Whatever you got to do, I'm going to be there for you.
I love you, babe. Let's talk this through and come up with a plan.
But I think you're right. I think there was a way that he wanted to be perceived. He wanted that relationship to be perceived, and this would not work for him.
Does not fit the narrative that he desperately, desperately wanted. And Marianne in the chat, she has talked about how this appears to be escalating domestic violence. And again, he hasn't been charged. This is our gut feeling, but there's something here that just...
I pretty much agree with you. I mean, you guys basically said what I said, but you gave a little more context to the story.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
I mean, I think it's something. I don't think Sam is necessarily a cold-blooded killer.
No.
I think something happened that escalated and got out of control, and something bad happened, and then there was some desire to try and cover this up or change the narrative, because it wasn't going to work out no matter what, even if it was I say accidental in quotes, because no one's going to look at it as accidental if your fiance's dead. And there was some sort of, that's murder, whether it's first degree, second degree or whatever. But
Tony, the uncle is probably the fixer in the family. We've been focusing on the Adelson family.
Yes.
The uncle is the one who always swoops in. And I came from a family where there was an attorney. And anytime anybody got into any sort of trouble, guess who they called? They called the attorney. So-and-so got arrested. So-and-so got a speeding ticket.
Yeah.
Whatever. So you call the fixer. And this is a horrific event. You call the fixer and see what they can do.
He's on the phone with the fixer before he even knows there's anything wrong with her. That's the thing.
Well, that's what he's claiming.
That's what doesn't make sense. Why would you be calling your attorney uncle from the hall, right, and you know nothing's wrong with her, your concern is to get into that apartment because she's not answering the door and you're calling your attorney uncle? Why?
No, you call the police because
is he going to come over and break the door open for you because you're too weak? I mean, what is the purpose there?
But
there
again,
is no purpose.
If
there's
if you can't get into the apartment, if you're locked out, your first thought is, I need to call the police.
Yes, it's
and
not.
And if your fiance is in trouble, the fire department can come and take that door down. I know how to break down a door. We were taught to do that as firefighters with all the tools. That's your concern, is I need to find out why my fiance is not answering me.
Yeah.
Not, uncle, you need to come over and take care of shit.
Mm-hmm. That's what's so weird about the whole damn thing. Again, innocent till proven guilty, never charged with anything, maintains his innocence. Still, you know, the family, everybody, including the uncle, it's a suicide. And according to them, they don't talk about it.
I bet they don't.
Per the documentary, they don't publicly make statements about it, is what I should say.
Well, so, I think at some point they need to start making statements.
I think at some point they're going to have to start making some statements because there's a lot of statements that are starting to be made for them in the ether by everybody out there now talking about this that, we're talking about the Ellen Greenberg case and the new documentary that is out on Hulu right now. Highly recommend checking this thing out because it really blows the door open on what so many people have been wondering and thinking about this case for quite some time, and lays it out with, I'd say, like scorched earth evidence that really makes you go, okay, something is really not adding up here. Let's take a look. This is our second clip. And this is taking a look at the early homicide ruling that came about a few days into this. It was initially unaliving, and then a few days in, after people had a chance to look at it after the snowstorm, while she was about to be buried, they realized, wait a second, this seems like more. Let's take a look.
Huge blunt force trauma from a knife to the head. How was this ruled a suicide?
I have investigated stabbing suicides in my career. I've never seen anyone stab themselves in the back. There are specific wounds that typically we would call hesitation wounds. They are usually with suicide, and they're very shallow attempts at injury to yourself. There are some that I would call that on Ellen's body. However, a stabbing of this nature with so many wounds is just very atypical.
When Ellen Greenberg's body was taken to the medical examiner's office, the medical examiner, Marlon Osborne, looked at the body and looked at the evidence. And he, in fact, ruled this death a homicide. So they're going to be able to get a real investigation, and this family is finally going to get a call. Your daughter Ellen did not kill herself.
And they did. Unfortunately, they got that call as they were burying Ellen. As is Jewish custom, you bury the body pretty quick, which was like 2 days after. Let's go to our next clip, too, because this ties in. This is about the cleanup and the cover-up with the uncle that we've been talking about. It just kind of gives you a little more context into how this all went down.
The police determine this is a suicide. And because of that decision, you don't have a held crime scene, meaning it's not roped off and protected. This apartment is being professionally cleaned by a company called Crime Scene Cleanup. And the very next morning, all of Ellen's electronic devices were taken by her fiance's uncle, who's not even related to Ellen.
Yeah.
I think you're right, Tony. Like, we can talk about the uncle. We can talk about all that. If something happened here that hasn't been laid out properly by law enforcement and all that, they got lucky that the first responders did what they did, because without that piece, the other stuff could never have happened.
If Sam has anything to do with this, and if he conjured up at the gym or wherever he went that moment. Okay, this is because it's like a panicked response, but he got away with it. If he did this, he was able to get that. If you were in that situation, like I'm, because he was very quick to point out, I had to break the door down, and brings this up in the 911 call multiple times. First things he brings up. Then it's also brought up with the first responders, with the police, and there's mental health problems. And well, then this is, must be what it is. That also, I think, speaks to the miseducation or lack of education for those first responders, whoever was making that decision to say this is a suicide, of understanding human behavior in general. I mean, and why the hell would you just take the word of this guy? I want to know that answer. I want to know who the hell just said, okay, because he said it, this is what we're going with. We didn't see that in the doc. Whoever did that, whoever signed off on that, I'm sure not too keen to have that decision known, because it might be one that they're kicking themselves over, going, how could I have been so stupid?
Excuse me.
Well, the department and the city and the state should be all over that. What the hell happened here?
Well, the department and the city and the state don't want to have any blood on their hands, for lack of a better term.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Unfortunately, it's starting to look like maybe. That's all I'll say.
Are they covering up for someone, or are they covering for themselves? And whoever did this is just riding the coattails of that, of pure dumb luck, because nobody has ever gotten very deep on this like this documentary did and enraged the public enough to start getting some pressure behind it. Because it, in so many cases, as we've seen, things will sit and nothing will happen just because they're ordered by a court to say, you got to go reexamine this. Doesn't mean they're going to do it. They still haven't done it. They have to go to court again. Mid-October, the 14th is the next hearing, to go, come on, guys, you've already been ordered by the grown-ups to do this, so you better get on it, and we'll see what happens. But, you know, being ordered to do something and following through are apparently two different things. It's not exactly obligated. You can just keep telling them and spending money and getting court orders that never actually take place. So it's maddening. The question, though, is why will we not look into this, or why will they not look into it the way that is needed? And at the end of the day, can we get to an answer in this case also? Or is this one of those where, yeah, it certainly looks suspicious, and there's so many questions, all the questions we're answering or talking about right now, or trying to theorize answers on, and others have already done this in the past. Maybe investigators have already done this in the past. And the real answer is, yeah, a lot of circumstances here, not enough evidence to get a charge. I don't know that there is enough to get a charge, more or less a conviction, because again, the evidence was all destroyed.
And that's fine. If that's what it is, then communicate that with us.
Yes.
And I think, you know, the question isn't, is there a cover up from the government, or is there a cover? I think there's a combination of cover ups going on.
I do too.
Yeah.
I feel like there's two.
One on top of another.
Yep.
And they mutually benefit one another. Let's take a look at the security guard. This is what he had to say in the documentary on the new one on Hulu.
I just figured they were into some kind of argument and he got locked out. He was pacing back and forth, and I don't know, he looked worried about something.
When he came again, he was much more agitated. He said, I need to get in the fucking unit. So I said, well, is something wrong with her? He said, I don't know. And as he was departing from the front desk, he said, well, I'm just gonna knock the fucking door down.
Is for that the police to do?
I don't think so. I disagree. If you can't get into your apartment and you don't know what's going on with your fiance, she could be in danger, I'm going to knock that fucking door down too.
I probably would too, Stacey.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, there's no waiting for the police in a situation like that.
I'd call my friend Stacey with the 8 or 9 knives laying around her apartment and see if she can come over and do some damage on it. But yeah, I listen, if my loved one was in there, that door is coming down.
Yeah, you're making a good point. But the point that I'm coming from is that an apartment door is very different than other doors. You know, they have the latches, all of like the deadbolt.
There's only one deadbolt on this thing. We know what it is. It looks like a hotel door.
Right, exactly. To me, that seems like it would be difficult to break down, like a metal door.
It doesn't look like any sort of special door, quite honestly. It looks like it's not a metal door necessarily. It looks like your average. I think I've had more apartment doors that are a hell of a lot weaker than my home doors. This doesn't look like it was that difficult of a door to break down.
Okay.
Quite honestly.
So, and even if it was, I'd still be going ape shit on it.
Yeah.
And they'd come and I maybe didn't get in, but the door would be beat up pretty freaking good just from me losing my mind.
That's the other argument on this. You're going to break the door down and then all we see is just like a little bit of wood that seems to be kind of out of place on the side of the lock that's affixed to the frame. It doesn't exactly look like you broke the door down, and you would likely have a hell of a lot more damage than what we saw. That's where I go back to, you got to make the scene look like something. Well, I mean, you could certainly do that from the inside and make it appear as if this thing was locked and you got in. And I'm sorry, there's ways of getting past those fucking bolts. There are. They're not that difficult to bypass. I've been locked out of an apartment before by myself. They even talked about it on the thing where it's like, and if you slam it or something, sometimes it can, you know, wave and then it'll, the pressure of it or the vibration can make the latch swing over. There's ways. It's not rocket science to be able to get in the way that this was portrayed as being such a feat. Let's go to our next clip. This is taking a look at what took place and the oddness, the strange feelings that the property manager had as the uncle came to get some stuff.
I know I was letting someone else in that I didn't know, and I didn't want to be held responsible for anything missing. When I went into the apartment, the thing that I remember the most is the setting. I remember walking in and seeing blueberries on the counter, a couple of knives in the sink. It was so serene, you know, cleaning the fruit in the kitchen, just an everyday event. That's what it looked like. There was laptops. I remember the engagement ring. And then I remember the blood. I didn't stay the entire time with the cleanup crew, but I do remember that they had on hazmat suits and protective gear, and they put everything in the dishwasher and turned it on and wiped it up, and that was it. Two men arrived. One was Sam's uncle. I wanted to do my best in balancing my sympathies and helping the family as well as my role as property manager. So I did stay there with them as they walked around. I just stayed in the living room. They weren't in there too long, maybe 15 minutes or so, and then I locked up behind them.
Okay, something she said there, the engagement ring.
Yep, that's right. She was not wearing her engagement ring.
But now she could have taken it off because she was cleaning fruit, but that doesn't sound like somebody who doesn't want to live anymore. I'm going to make a fruit salad and then I'm going to check out.
Oh, and get gas right before.
And also, she was not wearing her ring a lot. People were asking her about that. That was brought up in the documentary.
Yes.
And that's why I'm wondering if she decided, this is not
for me.
You're not the person for me. I don't want to be with you. I've changed my mind. I don't like the trajectory of my life. I'm making some changes, and he gets pissed off.
Which we all know those moments are the most dangerous for anybody. If you're having that conversation, and like if something's going to happen, that's going to be your best odds of something horrible happening.
Yep.
Right at that moment in time.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, and again, they also said not a struggle at the scene. Take a look at crime scene photos. You know where those photos were taken by? They were taken by the building manager. Because she went in and said, this is kind of weird that...
Mm-hmm. And you know what? Thank God for her. She was really kind of smart in this whole thing when she walked in and videotaped it and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Thank God she did that.
And because the knife block is laid down.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks like it looks like if someone's like running to get it. If you're going to do this, to yourself, which, number one, stabbing yourself is insanely low. The odds are like next to none. And then the amount of times, again, we can get into that 50 ways to Tuesday. It's impossible what she did, pretty much, through most accounts. Nothing adds up. Nothing adds up in this case. And might I add this, and it has nothing to do with the case, but the knives just go in the dishwasher after they were like, after they killed somebody, was in somebody and they died. And you're like, well, we can still, it's still good for apples. It's just like, why are these? The sad part is, yes, that is how that works.
I thought you were looking at it more from the foodie that you are, and you would never put a good knife in a dishwasher.
Well, those are hand wash.
Right, exactly. That's where I thought you were going.
Those were Henkel knives.
I was just going to say, I've got those knives. I do not put those bastards in the dishwasher. I mean, we know that they're lying around my apartment, but No, I hand wash my
Look,
knives.
If somebody ends up dead in my house, it's probably because they put them in the dishwasher.
That's now, save this clip, Todd.
Yep, yeah. I marked it.
Okay, just saying. That or pans. You don't put pans in a dishwasher either. Let's watch another clip here.
We'll have to talk later on that one.
For what, pans in a dishwasher?
Yeah.
Well, you don't cook, so.
I'm starting to. I have to. I'm a single woman. I can't eat Subway for the rest of my life.
Okay, well then, tip, don't put your pans in a dishwasher.
Thank you.
Start out right. It destroys them. It destroys the seasoning on the pan. It'll make them sticky, and you don't want to do that. So don't ever put pans and pots in a dishwasher.
Okay, we'll talk later.
Let's take another look, another clip here. This is the medical examiner talking about, this is talking about the medical examiner here in our next clip.
The medical examiner found that she had died of stab wounds to her chest and torso. Because of those findings, investigators with the homicide unit returned to the apartment today to search for any additional evidence that could result in this becoming a case of murder.
Once the medical examiner ruled this a homicide, it's like, whoa, go back and investigate. Too late, we allowed the crime scene to be cleared, which allowed cleaners, professional cleaners, and I'm not talking residential cleaners, I'm talking crime scene cleaners, to come in and clean the crime scene.
We're saying it's a suicide, and then 2 days later, we're saying it's a homicide. So they gave the window to be able to clean the scene up. The scene is tainted. As far as my personal investigation, I've never been out after a professional company cleaned the crime scene up.
When a scene has a computer, or a cell phone, or a laptop, you tend to want to seize those and to keep those in a safe place. There's this whole concept in law enforcement and investigation and in court cases known as chain of custody. Where was this evidence? Who took control of it?
While retrieving items for the funeral, Ellen's devices were taken out of her apartment by two members of Sam Goldberg's family, specifically his uncle, Jamie Schwartzman, a prominent Philadelphia attorney. After her death was ruled a homicide, he turned the devices over to the police.
So what should be done wasn't done.
So many errors happened in this case that all snowball. You don't have crime scene unit coming. You don't have investigation.
So all of that, it just adds up to this mad moment where everyone was able to walk away from this and not have any sort of repercussion. I mean, at the end of the day, snow, I guess snow is to blame. The bad weather is what really allowed a lot of this to take place, because the homicide investigator, they were on, a very tight list of what they would be able to respond to. And at that moment in time, during that nor'easter, this wasn't one of them. It would have had to have been an active homicide investigation for them to be called out, but they weren't. So I do wonder how much that played into it as well. Was this a really just dumb move by somebody of, well, it's snowy, you know, we don't want to overextend ourselves for real emergencies. For whatever reason, this didn't register as someone as a real emergency because the person's already dead. I wonder how much that played into the decision of saying this is a suicide and let's not bother the homicide investigator and call her out in the middle of this blizzard.
There's just so many failures here.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. How many facets of this case needed to fail to get to where we are?
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Yeah, and it's just this cascade of events. For lack of a better term, it snowballed. Like one failure after another, and I don't know if it was intentional or if it was just so many people dropped the damn ball. But
so it makes it like a perfect storm in a lot of ways. I mean,
literally,
it really, really does.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.